From WBUR Boston, I'm Jackie Leiden, in for Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Millions upon millions of Americans will fly this holiday season, and you can bet that there are more of those hidden airline fees than ever. Booking fees, baggage fees to cancel, fees to go online, fees to change, fees to print a boarding pass. Seems like a seatbelt is the only thing that won't cost you extra on a plane. This hour on Point, flying savvy this holiday season, and we hope sanely. You can join the conversation. Are you packing up the kids and heading out on a trip? What are your tips for traveling on a budget? Where do you find the best deals on airline tickets? How do those tickets get made and put together anyway? And joining me now from Washington is Frank Jackman. Frank is the Deputy Managing Editor of Aviation Week. Frank, welcome to On Point.
Thanks, Jackie. How are you?
Doing just fine, but I don't have to fly anywhere until a little bit later in the week, so and not Thanksgiving Day or the day before. How many people are expected to fly this holiday season?
Just over 23,200,000.
So obviously we haven't let all those niggling fees bother us too much, I guess.
No, we really haven't. Although, I mean, this is down somewhere between 35,000 and 40,000 from a year ago, but there are a lot of people traveling. It's the busiest time of the year for air travel.
Well, Frank Jackman, tell me how all of these fees, which just seem to proliferate, came about, and are there some new ones being levied?
They came about as the airlines struggled to figure out a way to make some money. If you think back 3 or 4 years ago, fuel prices hit the roof, airlines lost billions of dollars, and that was one of the impetuses to figure out a new business model. And we've seen a number of low-cost carriers come up with what they now call ancillary fees. And that's the idea that if you want a meal or if you want to check a bag, then you should pay for it. And if you don't want those things, then you shouldn't have to pay for it.
Well, it's one thing, perhaps, to, in a tight era, pay for a meal. After deregulation, airlines were supposed to be able to compete better. Now people are being asked to pay for things like printing out a boarding pass. It seems like there's no end in sight as to what airlines are dreaming up to charge us.
Yeah, the airlines really have a pretty good imagination when it comes to things they can charge us for. I think the key for consumers, though, is to look at those fees and, you know, the airlines that are charging them and compare those, you know, their total fare, you know, what the bottom line price they end up paying with what they would pay at other carriers that don't charge as many fees. I mean, that's where you get the true, that's where you can really tell whether these fees are justified or not.
How would you characterize the need to make money versus the need to have a sane and comfortable, well-priced flying experience? Are we in an era where certainly carriers want to cultivate good business practices and happy customers, but it seems as if we are in an era of unhappy customers?
I definitely think we're in an era of at least displeased customers. But at the end of the day, the airlines are in it to make a profit. And history shows they don't make much of one. I think that the latest figures on profit margin expected this year and next is like 90 cents on the dollar, like 0.9% is the profit margin. So, I mean, it's tough. The airlines are in a difficult position. They have their largest cost item, the price of fuel, is pretty volatile. When it goes up, they lose. Their expense base goes up by hundreds of millions, if not billions of dollars. So, you know, they are in a lot of ways and struggling to figure out how to survive.
What else are we seeing airlines do to survive? What else are they contemplating?
Well, in addition to the fees, they've become much more adept at trying to getting a handle on their fuel prices through hedging and other things. Most of the airlines that I can think of have been through some sort of Lean Six Sigma or other, you know, business process management process, for lack of a better phrase. They're really keenly focused on keeping their costs down for one and keeping their capacity in line for another. Historically, airlines, you know, the airlines in good times would add a lot of extra seats into, you know, their markets in a, an attempt to grab market share. They've really kind of backed off that now. And if you, you know, if you follow it closely, you see that the capacity, the number of seats in the market, grows at a much more, at a much slower, and some would say more sane pace.
Well, thank you very much for joining us, Frank.
My pleasure.
Frank Jackman is the deputy managing editor of Aviation Week. And joining me now from New York is Pauline Frommer. She's the editor of a series of travel guidebooks, Pauline Frommer's Spend Less, See More. Pauline, thanks for being with us.
Hi, Jackie.
Hey, can I just play you something that I think sort of maybe characterizes how a lot of us feel when we fly?
Please.
This is a classic 1980 film clip from the movie Airplane, and it changed the way we look at the friendly skies. And in this cockpit scene, Pauline, the plane is preparing for takeoff.
Niner, you are cleared for takeoff.
Roger.
Huh? L.A. departure frequency, 123.9er.
Roger.
Huh? Request vector, over.
What?
Flight 209er, clear for vector 324.
We have clearance, Clarence.
Roger, Roger. What's our vector, Victor?
Howard radio, clearance, over.
Let Clarence over.
Over.
Roger.
Huh?
Roger, over.
What?
Huh? Who?
That's what I think is going on sometimes, Pauline.
Well, it feels like it. Maybe not in the cockpit, but perhaps in the executive suites as they're trying to make profits, as he said, and they have not been able to. But yeah, the fees are just getting out of control. Last week, Spirit Airlines raised the fee to buy your ticket online, which means in order not to pay this fee, you're going to have to go to the airport to buy your ticket, which nobody will do. The fee is now $34 round trip. Wiping out any savings you'd probably have by booking Spirit. And that's just the tip of the iceberg. It's ridiculous.
It seems to me that as airlines try to hold on to profits or make profits and come up with these ever more innovative ways to charge, that the consumer really is left with, you know, a Victor Vector, Clarence Clearance kind of approach to booking a flight in the first place. I want to talk to you about all kinds of trips people might take this time of year, although we are concentrating primarily on flights. But what do you suggest? Where do people begin when they pick up one of your guidebooks and think about how to fly there?
Well, the key is you have to search smartly. There are now these sites out there that don't sell airfare. They simply search different sources of airfares. So they might look at the discounters. They'll look at the airline sites themselves. They'll look at different things, and they have names like Momondo and Doohop and Kayak. And they give you a broader search. Another thing that's great to do is get on Twitter. The airlines really want you to buy the airfare from them directly, because that way they're hoping to upsell you. They also want you to rent you a car. They also want you to buy a hotel room through them. And so they are having these flash sales on Twitter that usually only last 3 or 4 hours, short enough so that no third party can hone in and, you know, say, oh, come to us and we'll sell you this ticket. And the prices can be remarkable if you're flexible enough and glazed enough to be staring at Twitter for hours on end.
So to upsell means that they want to sell you a package at the same time they're selling you a ticket?
It's not necessarily a package, but on their websites now you can buy rental cars, you can buy hotel rooms. When we use the word package, that usually means that the fees are hidden. You don't know exactly how much you're paying for the airfare or how much you're paying for the hotel room, but the overall cost is less than you'd pay to book those elements separately. And those can be great deals in places that have a lot of competition among hotels, places like Cancun or Las Vegas or London. Not such great deals often in smaller markets.
Pauline, do you get people writing to you and saying, look, I'm skeptical about how much I'm going to be paying for my holiday or my vacation?
Skeptical or depressed might be a better word. I mean, prices are definitely up, especially for airfares. As your first guest said, there are simply fewer flights in the skies nowadays. They've cut the capacity in order to raise prices. So that's taking a bigger chunk. And the fees and taxes, he didn't talk much about the taxes. But if you're going abroad, sometimes the taxes can be as much as the ticket. So People are getting more creative about saving money in other ways. It's getting harder to save money on airfare, but you certainly can on lodgings. You certainly can on sightseeing, and that's what people are doing.
And we will talk more about that in our next segment, but I want to ask you quickly, we only have about a minute or so here. Those taxes, are you able to look at what they're going to cost you before you book your ticket?
Yeah. Unfortunately, it's usually at the very end of the process. So you've done your search, you think you have a great fare, and then it keeps adding up and adding up as they keep putting in more fees and taxes. So you have to get to the last page, the one right before you book, to figure out how much it's actually going to cost.
You'd think that with so many angry customers that airlines might cut back on fees.
I don't know if they can. You know, they're in such competition with one another that the initial price has to be equal to their competitors. And then they're losing money. That's the bottom line. They just are not profitable, really. So these hidden fees are the only way they can stay afloat, I firmly believe. And they're making billions of dollars in these fees.
This is On Point. I'm Jackie Leiden, in for Tom Ashbrook. We're talking today about the state of air travel, the art and the science of finding a good deal. And we're talking today with Pauline Frommer, the author of a series of guidebooks with tips for traveling on a budget. And Pauline, I am inflicting on you all the movie clips that we have pulled, because when it comes to flying, I frankly was surprised at how often travel and specifically air travel have come up. Now, as you know, the recent movie, Up in the Air, followed a perpetual traveler, George Clooney, as he closed in on his goal of acquiring the 10 million frequent flyer miles.
To know me is to fly with me. I'm the aisle, you're the window. Trapped. We start chatting impersonally at first, our moderate politics, our sinking opinion on the American service industry. You recommend a hotel in Tulsa, I tip you off with a rib joint in Fort Worth. You tell me your best joke. I've heard it before, but I listen anyway. Nothing like turbulence to cement a bond. Soon you're telling me about your family.
So he's talking about a personal element, Pauline, that he brings to his travel and his quest to rack up miles. Do you think people actually do fly that way?
I do. You know, in a program like this and in the media as well, we always talk about the negatives of flying. And certainly there are a lot of negatives, but really we're a blessed generation. What other generation could have gotten from one continent to the next in a matter of hours? You know, that flying, for all its problems, opens up the world to us and still is a miracle. So, you know, I always hate to just bash the airlines because they've got their problems, and then they obviously they're not perfect. They're, in fact, getting less perfect by the day. But it still is a great thing to go out and see the world, and this is a means to do it.
What are some good destinations right now?
Well, if you're looking to save money, you go to the places that are in trouble. Some of the places that are in trouble are Las Vegas, because it built way too many rooms and has less of a convention business than it did several years back. So the prices there are extraordinarily low. If you're going to Europe, you go to the so-called PIGS nations, which I hate to use that acronym, but it stands for Portugal, Italy, Greece, and Spain. A lot of these, actually, Portugal, Ireland, Greece, and Spain, they're cheaper because they've lost a lot of their business travel. There are remarkable deals to Ireland recently. And Iceland, obviously, was kind of the canary in the coal mine for this recession we're in. And they are trying so desperately to bulk up their economy by getting tourists that they have special programs they've set up where you can go to Iceland and have sushi with the mayor of Reykjavik for free, or go to a dairy farm and meet a local farmer. They're being very creative in trying to bring in tourists.
You can have sushi with the mayor of Reykjavik?
You can, yes. And it's not Japanese sushi. It's Icelandic sushi. Who knew that existed?
Oh, my goodness. I hope that they leave the reindeer alone. We are getting lots and lots of calls, Pauline, so I feel that I should get to some of our callers. Jerry is calling from Brattleboro, Vermont. Welcome to On Point, Jerry.
Hi, Jackie. I just have a travel tip, and I have a real serious question. My children live in Europe, and, you know, my ticket to there is like $200 plus $500 taxes, and they never explain what this is for. I mean, this is, to me, outrageous, and I just need someone to really brass tacks how much and why this is happening. And secondly, if people go on www.skyauction.com, they can find some very, very good deals, but it's like everything, you have to be patient.
All right. Thank you so much, Jerry. Well, Pauline, we were talking about taxes only a moment ago.
It's not just taxes. It's also the fuel surcharges, which have gotten higher. I believe fuel is 40% more expensive than it was last year for the airlines. So that's a big, big chunk of it. And you know what? Airfares to Europe are probably going to be getting higher soon because they are going to be imposing, the European Union is going to be imposing an extra fee for carbon offsetting.
Maybe
in the coming months. So it's going to get worse.
Maybe we should take a ship.
You can. Actually, there are great deals on cruises. That probably is one of the most cost-effective types of vacations nowadays, if you can be really disciplined once you're on the ship. They have these remarkable sales that allow you to go on these vacations for $50 a day, including, obviously, where you sleep and 8 meals a day at every buffet possible. But the problem is, once you're on the ship, you are captive, and they are expert at getting you to buy things on the ship. I once heard from Carolyn Spencer Brown of Cruise Critic that the average cruiser spends 25% the cost of the cruise once they're on board the ship. And if you're foolish enough to go into the casino or the spa, you're going to spend 75% of the cost of the cruise. So a great value vacation, but be careful.
Well, thank you for that. And let's let's go to the callers, because they are like planes sort of stacking up here. Donovan is calling from Plymouth, New Hampshire. Welcome to On Point, Donovan.
Hey, Jackie. Thanks for having me.
And your comment?
I just want to say how impressed I am with Southwest Airlines. My friend and I booked a snowboarding trip two nights ago in January to go to Salt Lake City, and we only paid $554.
A piece, obviously, right?
Nope, together.
Together. Wow. That does sound like a deal. And you're going, what time of year?
January 17th to 20th. So it was just a quick getaway. Got a few days off from work. And the fact that I can travel there for so cheap is just great.
I'm curious, Donovan, did you decide to just look around and see what the cheap fares were? Or did you start with a place first?
Start with a place. I had tickets to go to a certain snowboard, a mountain out there, a ski mountain. So I had to go to Salt Lake City.
Okay, thank you. Well, Pauline, what do you think of that?
I think that's terrific. Southwest can be a great value. The problem with Southwest is it doesn't appear on any of the general search engines. So you have to do a little extra legwork to find out what their prices are compared with the competition. But Southwest gets a lot of love. They have great flight attendants. They don't have as many fees as the other airlines. And I think they're a terrific carrier.
What happened to the neighborhood travel agent?
The neighborhood travel agent unfortunately lost the basis for their way to make a living. It used to be that when they booked a ticket for a client, they would get a commission back from the airlines. The airlines stopped giving those commissions, and it really meant that the floor dropped out of that business model. That's not to be said. They can't be of value to the traveler. For example, for cruising, going to a specialist cruise agent can really save you money, because those cruise agents who sell a lot of travel get rewarded by the cruise lines with free upgrades and shipboard credits and other perks to pass along to their customers.
Let's take another call. Joe is calling from Boston, Massachusetts. Welcome to On Point, Joe.
Yeah, hi, Jackie. This is I just have a couple of comments. Or the main reason I called was when we were talking with the fellow from Aviation Week about the that money the airlines are struggling to make. I would like to point out the executive compensation, how high that is, and a lot of the fees that are charged, that they are getting a percentage, such as, you know, at one airline, the buy-on-board meals that are $7, the executives get $1 of every meal sold, and there's a lot of hidden costs, and I just think that a lot of the fees and along with the tax and stuff should be better explained. It should be, I know out of London, you were talking out of Europe there. I know the departure tax out of London to the U.S. is $190. I think it's $190 U.S.
Yeah.
So anyways, I just wanted to put that in there because the executive population is very, very high.
Thank you so much for that comment, Joe. You know, that makes me think about something, Pauline. As this has all radically changed and changed so quickly, how much onus there ought to be perhaps on educating ourselves about what we're paying for?
Well, you know, the Department of Transportation is trying to make this all less opaque. They've put in a lot of good regulations. My hat's off to Ray LaHood. He's been a very activist head of the DOT. The problem is every time they try to make a change and make it clearer what you're paying for and make it clearer what the airlines are actually advertising, they get hit with a lawsuit by the industry. I'm hoping they're going to lose the current lawsuits they're in so that the DOT can make this all clearer and we won't have to have this conversation again.
Let's take another call. Greg is calling from Lexington, Kentucky. Welcome to On Point, Greg.
Hi, Jackie. I wanted to say that they say a fool is someone who keeps trying the same thing over and over again, expecting a new result. And I think it's time we really consider going back to a regulated industry. It seems to me every industry we've deregulated has made a few people extremely wealthy, but it's brought the industry to a crisis. If we had a integrated system like we had when I was a young person, it was a pleasure to fly. It wasn't terribly expensive. They didn't seem to have problems with the fluctuations in fuel prices and things like that. And I think that if we had a cohesive, coherent system I'm not saying we should put the private companies out of business, but I think travel is something that's real important. And we now see crises in getting to suburban areas that don't have a high population because it doesn't make sense for the companies to travel there. There's a lot of issues like that I think would be made a lot better if we had a cohesive system.
Okay. Thank you for that comment. What do you think, Pauline? Greg is talking about more regulation, and he thinks that would encourage people to travel more. But you said, you know, that in many ways we're a blessed generation. We are, in fact, traveling more. And
I think that there's a middle road to take. I think that he may be right. We should be regulating the airlines more. It's been a wild west for the last 10 years. But we should also be investing in rail. So many people are flying short hops that could easily be done by high-speed rail. You look at what Japan has. You look at what Europe has. We are soon going to be, with our population growth, we are going to be drowning in traffic in this country. To me, it's not a choice that we make whether we invest in rail. It's a necessity, and it will also take some of the pressure off the airline industry. So people will have another option.
I've done that in England, and I just loved it. It was a lovely sort of white linen treat. It was a nice
yes.
experience. Mark is calling from Burlington, Massachusetts. Welcome to On Point, Mark.
Hi, Jackie. I have a need to travel to New York City in a couple of weeks, and I'll be driving down, so I don't have the possibility of any sort of tie-in between an airline website and some discount for a hotel. When I look at hotel prices down there in Manhattan, it's all $400 per person per night or more. And the only alternative seems to be websites where you wait till the very last minute and don't know for certain if you're even going to have a place to stay, and then maybe you can get a good deal. And I obviously can't afford to do that. So do you have any alternative suggestions?
Pauline?
Yes, absolutely. Unfortunately, New York City is the most expensive hotel city in this hemisphere. So don't feel badly that you're only finding these prices. That's what exists for hotels in Manhattan. You can look outside of Manhattan. There are very good hotels in an area called Long Island City, which is basically Queens, which is on the subway line. You'll shave several hundred dollars off the cost of your night by doing that. You can look at places at renting entire apartments or renting a room in someone's apartment through such sites as Airbnb or HomeAway.com or VRBO. Believe it or not, these are often ways to save money. And then, as you said before, yes, bidding on travel through Hotwire and Priceline and the other sites
also can save you big bucks, but you got to be flexible. The final suggestion, if you must stay in Manhattan, do without a bathroom. I know that most Americans don't like to share bathrooms, but there are little guest houses and beautiful historic homes that simply don't have the plumbing to support multiple bathrooms. And if you're willing to just share a bathroom with three or four other people, you can save a heck of a lot of money.
Pauline, this may not be available anymore, but I was looking through some of your blog postings from recent years, and you had also mentioned a couple of, monasteries, religious institutions that let people book rooms.
There are some in New York, believe it or not. There's the House of the Redeemer, which is a non-denominational organization right off Fifth Avenue. There's another one run by the Catholic Church. If you're a member of the, or if you're a veteran of the military, there actually are hotels just for veterans and for active military that can save you money. So yes, there are many, many ways to save money in New York, but you have to be savvy because if you don't, you're going to spend a lot.
Jane is calling from Cornwall, Connecticut. Welcome to On Point, Jane.
Hi, Jackie. I was wondering if Ms. Frommer has a rule of thumb for when the best time is to book a flight. I've always thought maybe as far ahead as you could would be cheaper, but I'm not sure that's true.
No, it's not true. In fact, if you book too far ahead, the airlines know that you really want to travel and that they don't release the cheaper seats. You should always book between 3 or 4 months before you travel, unless it's a holiday period that you're traveling in. And look on Tuesdays and Wednesdays. Most sales are announced on Mondays. Then all of the other airlines match the prices on Tuesdays and Wednesdays and start raising prices again going into the weekend because they know people have time off from work and more time to search for airfares on the weekend. So never buy on the weekend if you can avoid it.
That's a really good tip.
Thanks.
Jane, does that answer your question?
Yes, I was also just wondering if she thought that the airlines were in general, if it's better to buy your ticket through them or on one of the online services.
You know, there's no right answer to that. Sometimes you'll pay less booking through the airline. Sometimes there are outside organizations like Expedia, Orbitz, Travelocity that put together air hotel packages that will save you money on the airlines. There are other discounters who buy seats in bulk and then pass them on to you with a discount. So you just got to search, unfortunately. Some of the aggregators I talked about before, Momondo, DoHop, Kayak, Hipmunk are just a few of them. They search all of these different areas and give you a broad search.
And of course, you must have a lot of these suggestions in your book, not only how to go there, but what to do after you get there.
Absolutely. And actually, my father, Arthur Frommer, has a book called Ask Arthur Frommer Out, which is all about the nitty-gritty of booking travel. Mine is more about destinations, but he really talks about the things I've been talking about today.
He is such a legend. How's he doing?
He's doing great. He and I host a radio show every weekend, and he writes a newspaper column and blogs daily. He's going strong.
Pauline Frommer, editor of a series of books about how to travel on a budget, spend less, and see more, and the daughter of the travel legend Arthur Frommer. Thanks for joining us. We wanted to give you your own moment here, Pauline.
Thank you.
This is On Point. I'm Jackie Leiden, in for Tom Ashbrook. We're talking today about airfares, how to navigate the complicated ticket system and find the best rates, if you can. I'm joined now from Washington by Nicholas Krylov, the author of the new book, Decoding Air Travel, A Guide to Saving on Airfare and Flying in Luxury. Nicholas is a former foreign affairs and diplomatic correspondent for the London Times and the Washington Times, where the frequent travel prompted him to learn more about how airline tickets work. Nicholas Krylov, thanks for joining us.
Hello, Jackie. It's not the London Times, the Financial Times. A little correction.
Thank you for correcting me. I appreciate that. So tell us the story that I think emanates from the Washington Times. That's when you kind of got into all of this.
I did. My job was obviously to cover the world of foreign policy, and I was traveling around. I've been to 82 countries. And as I was traveling, I figured out that there should be a system that helps me to, in a way, build my own airfare. And so all these websites that I find your other guests and some of the callers mentioned, those sites get their data from the same place, and they manufacture a product that they then give to you. And so I wanted to go and make, my own sausage by looking at raw airline data, figuring out the codes, the rules of the fare, the so-called legal routing, how I can maximize miles, how I can get upgrades. And so when I first got to the Washington Times in 2001, my predecessor in that job had been making about 3 to 4 trips a year. And I didn't think that was enough. So within a year, I decided I'm going to stretch the budget. I learn everything about airfares I can possibly learn. And within a year, I was making more than 10 trips with the same money.
So you have to be willing to drill down on a lot of this raw data.
And it made sense for me because and I was spending thousands of dollars a year on travel, and I had to minimize that or stretch that budget. And the other thing was, since I was flying long haul most of the time, I really cared about not being in coach. And so I could only afford to pay the lowest coach fares, as I did. But a little fun fact, the last time I actually flew in coach was 2002.
How is that possible?
Well, it's not easy. It's almost like a science, and you need to invest the time and effort if you really like to travel or if you have to travel, because, you know, there are many people who don't really like it, but they have to do it almost every week for work. And so I really sat down. It's obviously taken me years to perfect and master the system. But once I did, I thought, why not help other people do it, and which is why there is a book now. I found the key is, yes, learn the fare system. Learn how to get access to that raw airline data, how to build your own fare. But also, it's important to achieve elite airline status. Unfortunately, unless you have that status, the airlines don't treat you like you are a deserving customer. And so that's what I did. Back in 2002, I achieved the top-tier elite status on the airline or the alliance I fly most, and I've kept it since then. So to 10 years running, I've been top elite flyer.
Do you have to keep flying in order to retain that status?
You do, but many people do anyway. I honestly know people, and I have friends and clients who fly more than I do, and I fly over 100,000 miles a year still. They fly more than I do, but because they don't do it smartly, meaning they sort of spread themselves too thin and scatter their mileage across various airlines and alliances, they never actually manage to get to that really good elite level.
And an alliance is a consortium of a bunch of airlines, basically.
Yes, it's more than a bunch these days, actually. There are three global airline alliances: the Star Alliance, which is anchored by United in the US, and Continental now one airline. Your Lufthansa in Europe, Singapore Airlines, All Nippon in Japan, Thai, Air New Zealand, and so on, South African. That alliance alone has 27 members. So you fly on any of those airlines, just make sure you put all your miles in the same account. There's no point having a United account and a US Airways account and splitting the mileage. You're not going to achieve elite status on either of them, and it's a waste. The other two alliances are the One World, in which American Airlines is, and then SkyTeam, in which Delta is.
All right. Well, we are getting many, many calls, Nicholas, so let's take one. Linda is calling from Somers, Connecticut. Welcome to On Point, Linda.
Hi, Jackie.
Hi.
My daughter and I recently flew from Connecticut to Georgia, and we got a really great deal with about a month ahead of time. And my husband decided at the last minute to go, and the cost was double what I had paid for mine and my daughter's. So we were going to try standby, but we didn't understand what it meant. We got a little bit afraid to try it in case it was going to end up costing a lot more, so we didn't do it. But I'd like to understand what flying standby means.
Okay, thank you, Linda. Nicholas?
Standby used to be free, and it's not anymore. Standby is, of course, when you have a ticket for a certain flight, but you may not have a seat assignment, which is why this is one of the reasons it's very important to get a seat assignment as soon as you book your ticket. And many people still wait until check-in to get it, and I don't really understand that. But you should get your seat assignment. Even if it's a middle seat, get it. If you want to be on that flight, get it, and then check the seat map from time to time to get a better seat than the middle seat.
But you have to pay for that, $5 extra sometimes.
Well, Some airlines charge for the so-called premium seats, which are the exit row seats or sometimes the bulkhead with more legroom. But typically on most U.S. airlines, you can get some seat on the plane for free at this point. In Europe, it's a different story, but in the U.S., you can still do that. Again, it may not be the best seat, but get it if you want to be on that flight. If you want to go sort of to risk it and get bumped off the flight and then be given compensation for that, then it's your choice. But standby, again, used to be free. Now, all airlines charge for standby different amounts. The only way to avoid that charge is to have elite status.
So for Linda, the answer really would have been that there wasn't a whole lot at that point that they could have done.
No, there is something called the same-day confirmed change, which guarantees your seat. If you want, for example, many people say, okay, I got to the airport early, and there is another flight, you know, especially if you're flying between two busy markets like Boston and New York or D.C., and then you want to take another earlier flight, and then the agent says, well, that used to be free, but it's not anymore. And so if you want a same-day confirmed change, well, we'll guarantee you a seat on the earlier flight or the later flight, whatever you want it to be. But then there's a fee for that.
Let's take another call. David is calling from State College, Pennsylvania. Welcome to On Point, David.
Hi, Jackie. I fly fairly often, and I'd never really paid any attention to frequent flyer points until I read Decoding Air Travel by Mr. Kralov. And I found that when I submitted the tickets that I'd already flown to United for mileage compensation, I actually qualified for Premier Elite status. So I'm kind of a convert now. And I was excited to ask Mr. Kralov if he could offer maybe two or three of his top tips for those of us who are just starting out. I know that he teaches a lot of folks about this, and there must be certain things that come up over and over that, you know, he kind of wishes everybody knew about.
Some good basics, Nicholas?
First of all, I always advocate putting a little thinking into travel, both booking travel and then really carrying it out. What I mean is, I advocate, of course, finding the best fare, and as you will see in the book, it teaches you how to actually construct it yourself. But the second stage of that is to think about your comfort and convenience. I do not sacrifice those just to save a few bucks. For me, the best thing to do is to get the best of both worlds. And so when it comes to upgrades, for example, clearly elite status, as most of you could guess by now, is very, very important. But it's also very important to sort of gauge which flight will be easier to upgrade. You look at the aircraft operating it. You know, if there are only 8 seats in first class versus another flight with 12 or 24 seats in first class, well, clearly get on the flight that has the more seats in first class. And you will have, there's still meals. And I must say, in the recent months, the meals in first class domestically have become really good. Now, I always criticize domestic first class because it really has become disgraceful in many ways. They're now taking away pillows and blankets in first class. But at least you have a meal and it's a decent meal. So I would say look at the entire picture, get the low fare, see if you can upgrade, look at the times. Don't get up at 4 in the morning. I don't do that. I don't get up at 4 to get on a 6 o'clock flight to save a few bucks. No, I try to still save the money but get on a flight that's convenient for me.
I have to offer some food trips from this frequent flyer in planes, trains, and automobiles. Hope you won't mind me having some fun with you. John Candy shares some eating tricks with Steve Martin, who's stuck in the middle seat.
I always order a special meal. On this airline, I go with a seafood salad. On American, I'll have their kosher plate. Little slices of salami, some roast beef, some turkey, dark rye bread. Very nice. Now, if I'm flying United, I'll say I'm a youngster. They'll give me the kiddie plate. That's a hot dog, bag of potato chips, a gherkin, and a nice little bag of Oreo cookies.
What do you think this is?
Ooh. Well, about 7 hours ago, that was lasagna.
one just cracks me up. Well, you see, there are many ways to get really familiar with what airlines have on offer, Nicholas.
Yes, and Jackie, could I just clear a couple of misconceptions that people have about airfares? And some of them were mentioned earlier, and I sort of feel obligated to do so. When people ask when you should book travel and when you should fly, you know, we all say, and your previous guests and I do sometimes, you know, when you go on a TV show and you have 3 or 4 minutes, you have to generalize, and you say things like, oh, buy your tickets between Tuesday and Thursday, fly on Tuesday, Wednesday, or Saturday. And that's true for many fares on average. But the truth is, those rules really shouldn't be a Bible. When it comes to airfares, really, there are no rules. And your previous guest said you never buy tickets on weekends. Actually, I've bought many tickets on weekends that are lower than you've ever seen. It's really a matter of knowing where to get that raw data and how to find the fare and how to get that seat. And currently, I was just looking, I'm in your lovely NPR studios here in Washington. I have this computer in front of me, and I was looking out of Boston, for example. Currently, the best deal is to San Francisco, $99 each way. About 6 different airlines have that. The question is, how do you know how to get that fare? And for that, you have to go to the rules of the fare and see can you comply with them. And then you have to go to what's called flight inventory to see whether the booking class in which that fare is published is available on the days you want to travel. And then how flexible are you? Can you go a day earlier or a day later? Can you go 2 hours later or 2 hours earlier? And so that's really, I know it sounds too complicated here, and we're on the radio, but I have, as I've say to people during my book signings, my record of savings in coach on one ticket is $1,300, which it was an international ticket, and up to $5,000 in business class on an international ticket. So there is savings to be had. It's just a matter of investing and for you determining, is it worth spending an hour to save $500? Is it worth spending half an hour? Exactly.
Let's take another call because we have many and not much time left. Rob is calling from South Windsor, Connecticut. Welcome to On Point, Rob.
Hi, Jackie. My question concerns the frequent flyer websites, and I have consistently run into great difficulties using them for upgrades and ticket purchases, multiple calls, being referred to other numbers, to other numbers, to other numbers, etc. And in one case, being told that flights don't exist when I had the flights on the computer screen in front of me. Any tips on negotiating the websites would be greatly appreciated, especially on how to avoid the runaround.
Thank you.
Yes, booking award tickets can be very frustrating. One of the reasons is the websites, as you mentioned. Many of them are just not good enough. But keep in mind, most airlines provide only award seats on their own flights on those websites. In other words, all their partners in those alliances I mentioned before are not there. So to get those, you have to call them. Now, the problem with calling them is that many of those agents are just not well-trained. I mean, it's actually pathetic. You call an airline agent, and they don't know what code the flight would book into, let's say, in business class or first class on a partner airline. I'm amazed how poorly trained many agents are. And so that's why, really, I wanted to learn this system. When I call, I know exactly what I want. I know how to ask for it. I even know how they're going to do it.
So pick up the phone.
Pick up the phone, but do your homework. If you have miles in a certain program, learn what you're looking for. Business class, what booking class is it book? Is it I class? Is it O class? Whatever it is. And when you call them, to say, I'm looking for first class on Korean Air.
Okay.
You want to use Delta Miles. In that book's in that code. Do you have a seat in that code? Don't rely on the agents to know it because many of them don't.
So do your homework and be very specific. I want to get in just one more very quick call. David calling from Charleston, South Carolina. David?
Yes. Hi, Jackie. You're enjoying your show. I wanted to comment on the frequent flyer incentives you can get for signing up for credit card miles. It's something I've written about a lot in my personal finance column here at the Post and Courier. I've taken my family on a few vacations this year, didn't pay anything for the plane tickets.
Very quickly, we've got about a minute and a half left. Nick,
yeah,
credit cards are the way to go.
Thanks, David. You've got 50,000 miles sign up bonuses. I mean, I was in Asia. I came back. I flew first class on Thai Airways. I was in first class with my own private little cabin with sliding doors on it. And during my layover in Bangkok, I got a free 1-hour full body massage.
But what about us regular folks? Do you think that'll
Well, that's for miles. That you don't even have to fly 1 mile to get those miles to get first class on a good foreign, particularly Asian airline, because they treat you like royalty. That's the case. That is the truth. Sign-up bonus is 50,000 miles you get right off when you sign up. So do it.
So what one thing you're saying is have a mindset that this is obviously not for emergency travel. Have a mindset that you're going to educate yourself.
Yes, have it. And honestly, whether it's for emergency, last minute, or 6 months ahead, it helps. Because, for example, that fare that I was mentioning earlier about to San Francisco from Boston, 99 one way, that fare, you can buy it 2 weeks from now.
Okay.
3 weeks from now. Seriously, 99 each way plus taxes is going to be about 220, including everything, round trip.
All right. Thank you so much for being with us. Nicholas Kralov is the author of Decoding Air Travel, a guide to saving on airfare and flying in luxury. You can continue the conversation on the On Point podcast or on our website at On Point Radio. I'm Jackie Leiden, in for Tom Ashbrook. You're listening to Frank, and this is On Point.
Weather-wise, it's such a lovely day. You just say the words and we'll beat the birds down to Acapulco Bay. It's perfect for a flying honeymoon, they say. Come fly with me, let's fly, let's fly. Pack up, let's fly away.